Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for the Friday, May 3rd reading of East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. The first article today is from the Scottsdale Progress. It's titled, Candidates Slowly Start Spending Their Cash, by Tom Scanlon. Several candidates for Scottsdale's elected positions have an enviable dilemma. How to spend all this money. In the mayor and Scottsdale City Council races, candidates have been stockpiling hundreds of thousands of dollars of donations. The July 30th primary will narrow down the three candidates for mayor, former City Councilwoman Lisa Borowski and Linda Milhaven, and current Mayor David Ortega, and nine hopefuls hunting for three City Council seats. Candidate first quarter campaign reports were due by midnight April 15th. In addition to showing who donated money, candidates must report disbursements for operating expenses. A chunk of the collective spending will surely be used for signs that will flood Scottsdale streets starting May 30th. While the bulk of the donations will be spent in May and June, many candidates reported first quarter expenditures. As candidates first had to drum up support by getting the necessary minimum signatures to make the ballot, many spent money getting assistance with petition signers. Supporters are able to sign a paper petition or electronically. For instance, mayoral candidate Milhaven, a former three-term councilwoman, reported spending just over $8,000 in the first quarter of the year. Milhaven paid one vendor $2,650 for website and creative, another $2,298 for yard signs, and a third $600 for signatures. Asked about her strategy, Milhaven gave an old-school reply. I think it is most important to meet people face-to-face. Friends inviting friends to meet the people they support is powerful. Walking neighborhoods and attending events gets me out to hear what's on people's minds and to share my vision. Even so, Milhaven, a familiar face to voters for over a decade, almost grudgingly noted, email and social media plays a bigger and bigger part of the campaigns each year. In the first quarter, Milhaven raised $82,715, with $50,000 of that in a loan. Borowski reported raising $37,025 and spending just under half of that. And about half of the $18,025 Borowski spent was for one vendor, $9,400 for petitions. Borowski also paid a consultant $2,000 and wrote a check for $1,250 to the Arizona Digital Free Press for advertising. Like Milhaven, Borowski paid around $2,500 for website services. Our campaign budget includes all facets of outreach, Borowski said of her spending strategy. Social media will be a big push, ideally expanding reach organically. We are also doing limited advertising in traditional publications, street signs, and mailers. Leading up to her failed run in 2020, Borowski raised and spent $367,000. In this election cycle, Ortega has a dominant money lead after raising $119,107, including $42,857 in the first quarter. His spending was rather modest, $13,454, more than Milhaven, but less than Borowski. Ortega went big on advertising, $526 to Facebook, and $8,117 to iHeartMedia. He also paid vendor Purple State $4,553 for media consulting. Asked about his spending strategy, the mayor responded via email, no comment. I have nothing to say publicly while 2024 campaign is on. But Ortega apparently couldn't stop from crowing that in 2020, I spent approximately $115,000 and won primary and general, though outspent $830,000 or so by four opponents. Council races. In her first campaign 4 years ago, Councilwoman Tammy Caputi raked up a stunning $288,851. In the current election cycle, she has raked in donations of $169,213, roughly a quarter in the first 3 months of 2024 for her re-election run. In her first quarter spending, it was under $10,000, with $6,000 going to digital marketing, $2,000 to web development, and $1,200 to predictive dialing software. All of those were by the same vendor, Landslide Strategic Media. As a businesswoman, I'm always looking for a new advantage, Caputi said, regarding what she calls her always trying to improve campaign marketing strategy. I've been very visible on all social media platforms since taking office as a way to connect with and inform our residents, Caputi added. Adam Kwansman has raised $81,298, the second most money among Scottsdale City Council candidates. He spent $18,921. Kwansman paid Roosevelt Strategy Group $17,000, with $12,682 for signatures and the remaining $4,282 for consulting. Jan Dubakis reported raising $42,436 for her city council campaign. She spent just under $10,000 in the first quarter, with her biggest expenditure being $3,354 to a vendor for petition signatures. Dubakis spent $1,050 on Facebook advertising and paid a consultant $2,100. Her marketing plan? Voters are not all found in one place. Mediums that appeal to one voter do not appeal to another, Dubakis said. For that reason, we will use social media and traditional campaign tools to reach Scottsdale voters. In his re-election campaign, Tom Durham has raised $13,377. His biggest first quarter spending, Durham paid vendor Digitally Elected $10,000 for social media services. City Council challenger Justin Louse spent $7,500 of the $14,481 he has raised on signatures consulting paid to Roosevelt Strategy Group. As for his marketing plan, Louse said, "We will look to utilize a broad set of voter outreach strategies, including social media. Like others, he's looking to get the most bang out of his buck. Our strategy is to adapt to what works and what is most cost-effective while maintaining a strong grassroots foot-on-the-pavement effort." Marianne McAllen, a former city worker and volunteer board member looking for an elected seat to city council, reported spending $2,500 on graphic design and $1,000 on website design. Mason Gates, a 21-year-old political rookie, reported raising $5,228. According to his report, Gates spent $2,856, including $91.79 for donuts for police. Noting he does not have professional staff, Gates says he is figuring out strategic marketing on his own. "I'm allocating nearly the entirety of my marketing budget towards social media platforms," Gates said. "Ads are run with the purpose of generating conversations or donations, along with simply generating awareness." He added he is in testing phase to narrow down which ads set the performance best. Robert Lettieri's Bob for Council campaign has raised a total of $564, less than a tenth of what Caputi received from her biggest donor. He reported spending $267. Political newcomer Steven Ceceris, a West Point graduate, reported his Steve for Council campaign raised $0. And he did not report any campaign spending. And that article was titled, "Candidates Slowly Start Spending Their Cash." Earl Drive Development Pitched to Neighbors by Tom Scanlon. A developer is pitching a mixed-use medical office residential project that will include 124 living units. The Clayton Medical Suites and Residence would convert 5 lots covering 2 acres near Earl Drive and Civic Center Plaza. 2 blocks east of Scottsdale Road, the project is on the south end of Old Town. Phoenix-based K&I Homes sent a letter inviting neighbors to an April 16th open house in anticipation of filing an application with the city on or before May 10th. As the project requires rezoning from businesses to mixed use, the Planning Commission and Development Review Board each will review the application in yet-to-be-scheduled public meetings. Both will send their findings to Scottsdale City Council, which will have the ultimate say on the project. One neighbor who attended the April 16th meeting left with a sour taste in his mouth. The invitation sent to the neighbors, he told the Progress, said it's a four-story building, but it's a five-story building. At the meeting, they tried to be deceptive, but eventually admitted it's a four-story apartment building sitting on top of a one-story office building. Kristen Sergeson of K&I Homes said, "It's four stories over commercial. That's just how we talk in architecture. We're not trying to be deceptive." His feelings about the open house? "It went very well," he said. "They were very receptive of what we want to do." The architect said the project has plenty of parking, quite a bit more than is required. K&I Homes previously developed nearby 77 on the Park, an apartment complex in South Scottsdale. "It's an awesome project," Sergeson said, of the Clayton Medical Suites and Residence. And that article was titled, "Earl Drive Development Pitched to Neighbors." As players head out, "Ice Den Remains Open" by Tom Scanlon. Call 480-585-7465 and you will hear the following message. Thank you for calling Ice Den Scottsdale, the official home of the Arizona Coyotes and your home for ice sports. Ice Den Scottsdale was built 25 years ago, specifically as a Coyotes practice facility. While no official notice has been made, the NHL skaters who practiced on Bell Road just east of Loop 101 won't be getting ready for games here next year, as it's a long way from Salt Lake City. In one of the most bizarre franchise moves in sports history, the former Coyotes players are heading north to Utah, playing for a new yet-to-be-named franchise, according to ESPN. According to the Sports Network, Coyotes owner Alex Morello bags $1 billion in the sale and will maintain the name, intellectual property, and historical records of the Coyotes, which will now be considered an inactive franchise. Morello will have a 5-year window in which he can try to build an arena and bring a team to Arizona. On June 27th, the state will auction land just across the Scottsdale border near Scottsdale Road and Loop 101. A few weeks ago, Morello began a dizzying series of events when he said the Coyotes will be going all in on a bid for the land, where he plans an arena apartment retail behemoth complex. Though the land is not within his city limits, Mayor David Ortega blasted the plan, saying Scottsdale residents will suffer from traffic and infrastructure impact. Ortega's words were still echoing when ESPN broke the story that Morello sold the players and hockey operations to a Utah sports group. So now, what will become of Ice Den Scottsdale? "Our ownership and associated businesses are separate from the hockey club," our tenant and longtime partner, said Marcy Felicia, president of Ice Den Scottsdale and Ice Den Chandler. "The rinks will continue to provide youth and adult ice sports programming to our existing partners and community." Though the Ice Den website lists Felicia as president of Coyotes Ice LLC, she stressed the Ice Dens are not owned by the Coyotes, but by Rainey Partners and the Burke family. According to his bio at the Musical Instrument Museum, where he is the vice chairman, Richard Burke is the chairman and founder of United Health Group. He's also general partner of Rainey Partners, a private equity fund, and a former NHL hockey team owner. In another bizarre twist, Ice Den's owner Burke is the man who brought NHL hockey to the desert. Indeed, after buying the Winnipeg Jets in 1996, Burke flew the players to the Valley, putting them up at the Scottsdale Princess Hotel while pitching them about playing in Phoenix. 5 years after bringing pro hockey to the Valley, Burke sold the Coyotes. Now, some 15 years later, the team is headed north, though the Yotes shell franchise remains in the Valley. How will the Ice Den work with the team? It remains premature for the ICE Den to make any official statements on the situation, as the details are not confirmed yet as it relates to our partnership with the Arizona Coyotes, Felicia said via email. She stressed the Burke family will continue to provide quality ice sports for the community. Indeed, the ICE Den brings winter to Scottsdale and Chandler year-round. Our five rinks are programmed, on average, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, 360 days a year, Felicia said. The Coyotes did not respond to a request for information on their ICE Den plans. They may be considered hackers by professionals, but amateur hockey players battle it out on the ICE Den's Shane Doan rink and slightly larger Coyotes rink. Various levels of hockey teams, from first-timers to former pros, with names like the Zambronis, Dirty Rats, Desert Knights, and Dumpster Fire, shoot it out at the ICE Den just about every day. Many games are open and free to watch. ICE Den Scottsdale also hosts Adult Stick Time most Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons, and Adult Open Hockey for pickup games most Wednesdays and Friday afternoons. On top of that, the two ICE Den host figure skating clubs and top-notch skaters who go through workouts with their own coaches. Felicia and company also carve out ice time for public skating, where parents teach kids how to negotiate the frozen water as skilled skaters whoosh by. ICE Den's Scottsdale public skate sessions are 2 hours in length, unless otherwise posted, with a 20-minute intermission. The next scheduled sessions are 2 to 4 p.m. today, April 28th, and 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, May 4th. Dates and times are subject to change. Skate trainers are available to rent for a fee and can be used by these family-friendly sessions. Admission is $14 per skater, including skate rental. Space is limited. Online advance reservations are required at icedenscottsdale.com/public-skating. Registration opens at noon, 2 days prior to the sessions, and closes when capacity is reached or 1 hour prior to session, whichever occurs first. No walk-ups are permitted. And that article was titled, As Players Head Out, ICE Den Remains Open. Is Scottsdale Roundabout City? By Tom Scanlon. According to the old saying, it's not advisable to try to wedge a square peg in a round hole. Yet, city officials love hammering a square intersection into a circular one. At its April 16th meeting, Scottsdale City Council quietly approved an airpark area construction project that is notable for two reasons. The accepted and only construction bid came in nearly triple the original city estimate, and it includes a roundabout. Technically, the $4.3 million funding for Phase 2B of the Raintree Drive construction project will not build the roundabout, but the new intersection is a critical part of the overall plan. Indeed, the Raintree Drive makeover, no worries, road diet critics, this one adds a driving lane, is part of an effort to create a high-speed capacity connection through the airpark to the Loop 101. If you're seeing new circles everywhere you go, it's not your imagination. Roundabouts have already replaced nearby intersections at 76th Place and Redfield Road, and at Hayden and Raintree Roads. Indeed, it may not be an exaggeration to call Scottsdale Roundabout City. According to city policy, roundabouts shall be the first consideration for all intersections of one or two lane lanes per direction streets that require all-way stop control. Traffic signals could only be installed or remain if traffic or budget analysis justifies their advantage. Drivers approaching roundabout intersections see yield signs, meaning they should give right-of-way to someone already in the circle, but can continue if the way is clear. That process, however, is hardly straightforward to roundabout newcomers. Reader comments to this newspaper's social media posts on roundabout plans show a collision of views. They are the best, enthused R. Brian Schumann. Just make sure you use turn signals, he added. More helpful advice from Jay Jennings. If you're nervous about using roundabouts, find one during non-peak hours and use it continuously. Go through and turn around and go through, etc., until you're bored and it doesn't faze you anymore. Brett Russo, on the other hand, has two words to say about more roundabouts. God, no. Debbie Yetman echoed that. How about no? The roundabout coming to North Scottsdale Road and Dynamite Boulevard? This will be the worst decision Scottsdale's ever made, Melissa McCormick Wise predicted. Tom Grenz's strategy. Run around the roundabouts. I avoid Hayden and Raintree because of the roundabout, he commented. I've had some close calls there. People definitely don't know how to use them properly. Stephanie Hulsey doubled down on that. I really don't like roundabouts, as most people don't understand how to drive around them. Safety first. While some say things spin them in circles and drive them to distraction, Scottsdale officials insist circular roundabouts are far safer than four-way intersections. Last April, a roundabout at Miller and Osborne Roads was unveiled after years of construction and a budget that ballooned, largely to utility problems, from $1.6 million to $8 million. We have beat this to death, said Councilwoman Betty Janik, before reluctantly approving the money to finish the roundabout. This was not a good look for the city. It's over budget. It took too long. There were surprises when we looked underground. Councilwoman Solange Whitehead second Janik's rearview mirror summary. This was the case, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, Whitehead said. Those who like to play gotcha with the city pointed to a serious wreck shortly after the long-awaited roundabout opened. The intersection of Miller Road and Osborne Road is closed in all four directions for a single vehicle collision with life-threatening injuries to the sole occupant and driver of the vehicle, the Scottsdale Police Department posted at 2:43 a.m. May 14, 2023. Please find alternative routes. But it sounds like blaming the roundabout for this wreck would be like blaming air for a plane crash. Speed and alcohol consumption by the driver were factors in the single vehicle collision, Officer Aaron Bolin, a Scottsdale Police Department spokesman, said of the wreck at the new roundabout. The driver survived the injuries, and the case was referred to the Scottsdale City Prosecutor, Bolin added. A speeding, impaired driver can generally cause much more damage at a four-way intersection, City Transportation and Infrastructure honchos will tell you. Dan Worth, the city's longtime Public Works Director, confirmed circular intersections are Scottsdale's go-to plan of action. Worth said the council approved 2016 Transportation Master Plan and 2022 Transportation Action Plan, which made roundabouts the preferred means of traffic control at intersections. This does not mean we automatically use a roundabout when we make improvements to an intersection, he added, but it does mean there has to be a compelling reason to use a traffic signal instead of a roundabout. Contrary to some rumors, federal, state, and county funding does not tip the scale in favor of roundabouts, according to Worth. We usually haven't even done the analysis and made the decision at the time we get the funding approved. If Worth would describe why he hearts circle intersections in three words, it would be safety, safety, safety. Regarding the reasoning for favoring roundabouts, the primary reason is they are safer than traffic signals, he added. Accidents happen at roundabouts, but they are predominantly merging accidents that do not result in serious injuries. Accidents at signal intersections are often high-speed side-impact accidents that do far more damage and more often do result in serious injury. And those who grit their teeth while waiting for red lights to change at empty intersections might appreciate the efficiency of roundabouts. Circle intersections, Worth holds, have proven to be more efficient, reducing motorists' daily delay at intersections. Comments from Mark Melanacchio, Scottsdale's Transportation and Streets Director, merged with Worth's words. Melanchenko said roundabouts are usually far superior to traffic signals, multi-way stops, and side street stops. Studies have shown roundabouts to be significantly safer than traffic signals in reducing collision severity, injuries, and fatalities when compared to traditional control, Melanchenko said. And there's a climate benefit, he added. Roundabouts can also reduce delays, fuel use, emissions, and maintenance costs. Roundabout funding. Although it does not directly involve a circular intersection to which it leads, the second phase of Rain Tree Drive construction seems pretty, well, roundabout. City engineer Allison Timkew explained the process a few days after council unanimously approved funding of the $4.3 million, which, according to a somewhat vague report given to council, exceeded the engineer's estimate. Phase 2B, Timkew detailed, is for completion of the four-lane major collector between Thunderbird and 73rd Street to Redfield and 76th Place. This segment is currently two lanes westbound and one lane eastbound. The project will add a second eastbound lane. And she noted, this segment does not include a roundabout. The roundabout at North Site and Rain Tree, Phase 2A, will be a future separate project. The design engineer original Phase 2 estimate, Timkew said, was $1.65 million. The bid was $4,333,840 for Phase 2B. The estimate prepared by the design engineer was $1,654,731. The engineer's estimate was too low for the project due to inflation and price escalation of bid items, she said. The construction manager at risk contractor that did the work so far on the Rain Tree Drive corridor gave the city a guaranteed maximum price of just under $6.1 million. Too high, the city decided. After negotiations brought that price tag down, but only slightly, to $5.5 million, the city put the project out to bid. The one and only bid was from Granite Construction for $4.3 million, nearly three times the engineer's estimate, but substantially lower than the $5.5 million from the CMAR contractor. Granite Construction said it can do the whole job, including the roundabout, for $13.1 million. Again, that would be nearly triple the city's original estimate, which was less than $5 million. The rest of the project will come back to the council at a date to be determined. Information can be found at scottsdaleaz.gov/transportation/streets/roundabouts. And that article was titled, Is Scottsdale Roundabout City? You've been listening to the East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. Have a great rest of your day.